Good morning and welcome to Countrywide. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, Micah in Farm Buildings in Donegal, Dr. Evie Ní Houlamh on steps we can all take for nature, and female business owners in rural Ireland. We are on 51551 for your texts, countrywide at rte.ie for emails. We are coming into the big week of the National Ploughing Championships, which start on Tuesday in Laois. The All-Ireland ploughing competitions have actually been going since 1931. Well, down in Kilkenny, four competitors qualified from Mooncoins Ploughing Association, and they are going to represent Kilkenny across the 3 days of competition next week. Della Kilroy went along to see their preparations.
Now, Anna, this is the one and only.
So we're just after doing our opening split here, and so like normally like at when it comes to the All-Ireland, like, you know, you have a half an hour to do your opening split and then the judges come in and they judge that. We'll be going on to our middle then, so hopefully we'll keep it nice and straight.
Good, perfect.
I'm in Mooncoin in Kilkenny, where Siobhan Dermody is practising her ploughing. Crowned Queen of the Plough in 2019 and 2021, Siobhan will again be competing in the Farm F class at the National Championships.
I'm originally from Mooncoin. I was working in Doyle's Bar and I was just asked to take part in our local ploughing competition. That's where it all started. I won that competition and it all went from there. We're hanging in there. Hopefully it'll go better this year. I suppose last year the ground conditions were tough. So you're constantly, you know, looking behind, you know, making sure you're going okay. Listening out for signals from
Edwin.
How's that going? Oh yeah, she's going around nice and straight, as you can see there, Della. So that's, you know, it's uniformity and straightness, and kind of, we'll have your ploughing yourself very soon.
Eddie Doyle has been coaching Siobhan.
Now we're just throwing a few final touches to get, this is our third round now. For the initial then, we do a split out which involves two sods down the field, you know. And if you get off to a good start, it's like anything in life, you know, it's half the battle. So the competition is going to be higher again every year, because the ladies competition has got very popular. It's like everything the ladies are doing now, it is up there in the ratings, you know, so no different than what we're doing. But at the same time, it is a trade, or it is, we'll say, a craft that is dying out. Like everything in rural Ireland, people have moved away. Like, look, the ploughing was always the start of how everything was done. The land had to be ploughed properly, and I suppose this is, it's not necessarily as easy nowadays. They have big tractors, you know, little things like this would be only parked in the corner.
And your training, Siobhan, what goes into to the training?
Among other things, a little bit of bad language now and again, but like, it's great. It's the highlight of our farming year outside the farm, you know. So
what got you involved and what do you love about it?
I suppose when I was a young fella, I never done it much. I did when I was 18 or 19, but I didn't have time on the farm then because my father was always at it. I said, my mother said, it's the cows or the ploughing. So I says, all right, Ma, I'll milk the cows. I said, so that's grand. So I never, and not until he was at it right up until he died about 9 years ago. So to keep it going, we had to get young people involved. And look, it's like everything in life, unless the youth comes in, the whole thing dies with the older people, you know. Sadly enough now, we're the older people, Ned, myself and Tommy, and Ned ploughed with my father as well, you see. So he's elder coach Shane. So it's only down to the youth. If they don't get involved, it's history. There's no point in lads like us getting with bad knees and elbows and that at it. We need to gain the young people, you know. And hopefully we can continue it on this year, like, you know. At the end of the day, it's the marks on the sheet and you have to soak it up if we get better. And that right, Siobhan, last year we had to put up with it. So there's no guarantees. You just do your best on the day. And sure, look, competing is as important as anything else, you know.
Over to the ploughing here now, and we're currently measuring off.
19-year-old Shane is Eddie's son. Defending his title, having placed first last year, he'll be competing again with the under-21s.
We measure our width from our neighbour's plot over to our own. First of all, we'll measure the width of what we're ploughing. We'll measure across what we've left. We'll put down a few pegs and we have to drive inside them and get an exact width from one side to the other. Yeah, John Deere, yeah, that's what we're ploughing with this year.
Your dad got you involved,
how sure.
Did you?
I got dragged into it, yeah. He said one evening, sure, you'll surely plough next year, and sure, I couldn't really refuse. Something to be doing, and it's a grand old hobby, something to be at. Stressful sometimes, but myself and Ned are getting along grand now this year, and we're getting to practice in, and sure, there's a bit of crack at the end of the day.
Ned, you're training Shane.
Yeah, look, I gave a good few years ploughing myself, and Shane's grandfather, Petey, was my uncle, so it's gone full circle now. We can help pass on some of the knowledge that we have to the likes of Shane and the younger lads. To be honest, it breaks the monotony of the year, something different for a few weeks. Sometimes things can go great for you on other days and maybe not so much, and you have to be able to take the good or the bad. You know, a little bit of muck.
It's strange to be doing it in the dry weather anyway.
I'm Tommy Keelty and I'm ploughing 2-furrow hydraulic vintage.
Also competing this year from Mooncoin is Tommy. It'll be his 9th year at the championships.
What we have here is Massey Ferguson, 35. She's 1957. She's petrol, straight petrol, which is unusual. Yeah. So the best I done my year was 6th out of 23, so, which is very good. But you'd be trying to improve on that every year. It's very hard. You're up against a lot of competition when you get to that.
The weather hasn't been great this year.
Well, it's probably better than last year. It's nearly too dry last year. This year now you have a bit more, there's a bit more stick in the, a bit more bite in the ground, like so, which is good, yeah.
And how do you feel doing it? Why do you do it?
Oh, sure, hey, it just gets me away. No, it's as grand. This is before Stephen out now, so I should be out nearly a week ago, but sure, between everything, it's hard to get out.
What are you hoping for this year?
You'd be hoping for a good dry day anyway, and maybe top 10 finish or something like that, you know. So we won't go too far to the first top 3 now or anything like that. We won't push it that far.
Absolutely.
You can see the clouds coming in now, so I'll let you.
Yeah, I'd say we're not too far away from rain. This country, you're never too far from rain anyway.
Good luck. That's definitely true. Tommy Keelty from Mooncoin's Ploughing Association with Della there. Best of luck to them and all of those competing in the Ploughing Championships this coming week. Well, if you're female and living in rural Ireland and you've recently started a business, there is a free, publicly funded 6-month programme of support available called Acorns, that's run by the Department of Agriculture, and it's there to help you. There are 50 places available and the deadline for the latest round is next week. Well, with me are three such women who've been through the programme. I'm delighted to say Georgia Queeley, a chocolatier from Athlone, is here. She set up Bond Chocolatiers. Anne-Marie Feary of Feary's Farm Beetroot in Offaly, and on the line from Limerick, Rita Monzel, a hairdresser turned dairy farmer from Limerick who set up Wowet's Waterproof Agricultural Clothing Business. Good morning to all of you. Thanks a million for coming in this morning. Rita, down there in Limerick, I'm going to start with you. Hairdresser turned dairy farmer. And I gather, am I right in saying this, it was your 40th birthday when you started to milk cows on your new farm back in 2022 in the middle of COVID?
That's right, Ella. Yeah, I got a milking powder for my 40th birthday.
As you do. Yeah. So just briefly tell us that story. You were hairdressing. You had a farm with your husband.
Yeah, so we were originally living in Kerry. And in 2019, we sold up our home and we had some parcels of land. So sold them up and we moved to County Limerick with our family. And that was June 2019, and we were kind of still up and down working in Kerry. The two of us, Mike was in plant hire and I was hairdressing. And we had started to build up a herd in the meantime. And I suppose the lockdown then came then in March of 2020. And so we were both stuck at home and we had just started milking in the April. So I was rearing the calves and doing my apprenticeship in the parlour, getting to know how to milk the cows. And in that time, I kind of just saw that there was a lack of protective clothing for women. and I was getting really sick of washing clothes, having to get a new set of clothes every day for the farm. The kids were telling me I was stinking every evening when I come in from the parlour. So I just kind of took matters into my own hands and started to develop my business from that idea.
And so you set up this business called Wowettes, and it's particular clothing for when you are milking the cows to make sure that your kids don't say you're stinking anymore.
That's right. Yeah, so my first garment, it was a milking gown. So it's just protects your own clothes from getting dirty and wet. And it saves on the washing. I just couldn't find anything out there just to fit a woman. They were all kind of designed for men.
Yes.
And they were just too big and oversized. So,
And you've taken part in this Acorns program, and I'm going to talk to you a bit more about that. We're going to go from kids saying that you're smelly to here in the studio with me, Anne-Marie and Georgia. Georgia, you're a chocolatier. You make these chocolates. They are works of art. I mean, they're just beautiful. Tell me briefly about your own story.
Thanks very much. Yes, they've been described as edible works of art before. So my partner Daniel and myself set up our business during COVID, just as the lockdown hit. Like many others, we had lots of time on our hands, and both of us being trained chefs, were quite creative and like to do things kind of differently. Daniel had just completed a pastry course over in America just before the March of the first lockdown. So I was kind of mad to get my teeth stuck into all his new techniques and recipes and things. And just with that, we had been kind of trialing a few different ideas, and we were very fortunate to have the use of his dad's cafe, his mum and dad's cafe in Athlone called Beans and Leaves when they were closed. His dad just suggested to us if we wanted to give it a stab and try something.
During the pandemic lockdown, you were in that cafe cooking and cooking and cooking and coming up with ideas.
Yeah, we were kind of trialing and testing even our business plan. We kind of had an idea to do pastry and chocolate at the start, but that quickly reverted to just chocolate. So and we're very happy that we stuck with that route. But from there, we went, we were kind of producing there for nearly the first year, and with the help of the local enterprise office, we were able to open our own chocolate factory in Athlone. So we were really lucky to have the supports. And yeah, we sell our chocolates online. And
and you're fully fledged business now. And I'm going to ask you, as with Rita in a minute, just a little bit more about that. Anne-Marie, over to Offaly, the fields of Offaly, where you grow beetroot and you produce this lovely, delicious beetroot juice.
Hi, Ella. Yes, that's correct. I set up my business in 2019. And it actually came about because I went out to buy a bottle of beetroot juice for my dad. He had been reading up about the health benefits and taking down high blood pressure naturally. But when I went to source it, I discovered that there was no Irish brand producing it. And what was available for the Irish consumer was coming in from the UK and Germany predominantly. So this felt strange to me, the fact that, you know, we grow beetroot in Ireland, and why nobody else was making Irish beetroot juice. So and actually the fact that I brought it home, I was curious about the taste myself. I hadn't come across a product like that before. My dad would have brought it to my attention. And I do love, you know, anything healthy and, you know, a healthy product and all the rest. So that took me on to having a conversation with Chagask in Moor Park in Cork, and I got in touch with the artisan food specialist there at the time, Eddie O'Neill, and I just kind of, I suppose I posed the question, is there a particular reason why you think that there is no Irish brand, you know, producing beetroot juice? And there seemed nothing obvious. So the fact that I grew up on the farm at home, the fact that I had, you know, my two brothers and my dad grown vegetables, they grew beetroot, but I'll bet in a very small scale, I knew that I was in a good position to give this a go and that they could grow the beetroot for my product.
And the business has really blossomed since then. Your products are sold. I see them throughout Ireland. I just wonder, with regard to being female and running a business, is there something particular about that? Are the challenges particular for you?
Well, I feel like I'm in a very supportive community. With having a business in rural Ireland, I feel, first of all, people really want you to get behind you. Like for me setting up this business in Offaly, I've had great support from the local community. So in general, I feel like I'm very supported and encouraged every day. But by being in the Acorns group and being with a community of women, there is something special about that. It's very comfortable setting. You feel like you can ask, you know, any question. There's no question that's, there's no silly question, say. And a lot of the girls in my group, they would have been coming up with similar problems to me, even though the businesses are very different. I mean, it could be making jewellery, it could be my product, food product, but we have very overlapping problems that are the same. So being
things
in that,
like packaging, all that kind of stuff. Georgia, you're nodding there as well.
Yeah, packaging is probably the biggest one. I'm sure anybody that has kind of a similar product knows the strains that it has, and you don't really realize until you're kind of getting into the minimum orders and, you know, creating bespoke packaging, which takes months and months. Really, we thought it would be a quick turnaround, but it took us almost a year to get our bespoke packaging done.
And the Acorns program, I mean, it is women, so you are part of a monthly group that meets physically in a room, and you can talk through the challenges and give each other advice, but you also have a WhatsApp group, so you can ask constantly questions and get some help when you need it.
Yeah. Even now, the WhatsApp group is still there. The it's always open. Everybody's phone is always on. It's just really supportive, and there's no question that can't be answered. And everybody jumps in and gives their two pence about anybody's issues or inquiries. Or it's just very supportive.
Rita, down there in Limerick, you know, is there a particular challenge being female business owner in rural Ireland?
I suppose, like the girls were saying, you know, packaging and things like that. But nowadays, everything is so accessible with the internet. You know, just, you know, Google something and you'll get a list of answers. I didn't find any challenges. I suppose maybe your own confidence would be the biggest challenge that you'd come up against. And I suppose, as the girl said, being part of a group, you get that confidence to kind of just to drive on with the business.
You've been attending, Rita, these monthly meetings, haven't you?
I have, yeah. And we have a lead mentor as well. Our lead mentor was Caroline Reedy. And, you know, like, these mentors are years and years in business, and they've just so much advice. Any problem at all, they just seem to have an answer straight away, you know. So it's great to have that mentorship. It definitely does give you, you know, a good backing. It gives you the courage to just keep going with the idea.
And I'm sure, Anne-Marie, you know, even just knowing that you've someone to talk to when you have a problem, problems are usually surmountable, but just talking about it can often just help you get through a day that might feel particularly challenging.
Exactly, because you can have your head in the sand or buried with, you know, problems that you don't think, you know, they're not obvious to you, the solutions. And then you, at the meetings, it comes up in conversation, and then you have a group of girls there with fresh minds, and you know, you're trashing out the ideas, and the solution seems so obvious after the meeting. And also, I just probably mentioned there the fact that you have, like, as you know, George was saying, your WhatsApp group, and extended on from that, other people that you've come across through similar Acorn groups, and you have all these contacts in your phone book. You'd be a long time trying to accumulate those numbers if you're a small business in rural Ireland, and it accelerates all that. And you just, no matter what kind of issues you come up on a day-to-day basis, you have a number in your phone that you feel like you could reach out to. Somebody has come across that problem before, they found the solution, and it just saves you lots of time trying to get to the bottom of a similar problem in your own business.
It's a shortcut, a good shortcut. Georgia, you, your business is very much born out of COVID.
Yes.
Thinking back to when you were starting it, I mean, does it feel like a different world you're in now in terms of the amount of business help that you've got, the amount of sort of business skills that you've got? Because it's very different, isn't it, making these beautiful chocolates in a kitchen compared to actually running a business?
Yeah, totally different. As we were saying earlier, making the product is the easy part. The running of the business.
They don't look that easy to make, I have to say.
But, you know, you're kind of jumping into the deep end, especially when you mightn't have a business background like myself. And you're just learning as you go on, really. And looking back on the last couple of years, it's amazing what you can pick up and what you can learn. But the supports out there are really, really good. And I can safely say that we wouldn't be where we are today without all of the supports, all of the mentorship that's out there, and just even the networking, you know, just being able to reach out to people. And the help that people give you is just unbelievable, because really everybody wants to see a startup business succeed. So everyone will do their best to kind of get you off the ground.
And Rita, what are your plans? I mean, I gather you, it's sort of incredible, you're still hairdressing.
I am.
Along with,
I'm on
the
my
farm
way back to
and
Kerry
this
now,
business.
Actually.
You're what?
I'm on my way back to Kerry to do hairdressing today.
You're inventing time there. It's incredible. But what are your plans now for Wowettes?
So, yeah, I really want to drive it on and just to get it into as it's in some agri retail stores at the moment, but I'd like to get it into more stores around Ireland and maybe expand into Europe. But yeah, I definitely want to drive it on, and because women in agriculture, it's a big sector, you know, it always has been, but it's becoming more recognised. And you know, I just have one product that just makes life a little bit easier for these women. So.
Yeah, and what do your kids think? What do they say to you?
They
now?
Love it. Yeah, they love it. And they want me to do a kids' range.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. Yeah, and Anne-Marie and Georgia, what are your plans?
For me, it's probably be about the product itself and to brand awareness for people to recognise that beetroot juice, to give it a try, that there is so many health benefits from, like, as I said, helping to lower blood pressure. A lot of athletes would drink beetroot juice. It's good for iron, it's good for your for inflammation, for reducing high cholesterol. There is so many different health benefits, and I suppose to keep getting the message out there to people. And another thing is people have their preconceived ideas of how it tastes, and they think they might not like it. I think they have this idea that it'll taste like pickled vinegar from the jars years ago, and it's absolutely nothing like that. And the Taste Awards have proven that, because they're blind tasting tests. They don't really care if it's healthy or not. So for me at the moment, I just want for people to be able to get their hands on it, so to build the stock out nationwide.
And to keep going. And Georgia, I presume as well, eventually, like Anne-Marie, you're going to be advising new young women in rural Ireland as they start their business.
Yeah, that it'd be really mad to think that the full circle could come to that. But yeah, please God, it'd be really nice to be able to help someone along their journey, even just to help them with their confidence and to give them a bit of a boost, you know, in the right direction, I suppose.
Well, Anne-Marie Fury, Georgia Queeley here in studio, and Rita Munzel down in Limerick, thank you all so much for coming in this morning, and best of luck with everything you're doing. We're going to take a break.
Email countrywide@rte.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
51551 and countrywide@rte.ie. Well, thousands of homes across Ireland have crumbled because of defective bricks containing high levels of the mineral mica, which absorbs water and causes the walls to crack. But it isn't just homes that have been affected, but also farm buildings and silage pits. The epicentre of the scandal is Donegal, and that's where Leonard and Christina Toy live. Hannah Quinn Mulligan went to meet them.
Hannah, this is a typical mica wall. A wall built around about in the mid-1990s. Block wall to hold silage on one side and to have cattle pen on the other side. The wall is crumbling. It's ready to fall out. We had to stop putting the silage against it.
The walls, I mean, we're touching the walls now. They're like flaky pastry. That's the only way to describe them. They're just flaking away.
That is right. Up here, we call them the Weetabix walls. That's a name being given by a lot of young fellas round about the county, and they would remind you of a dry Weetabix. You could just reach for it and pull it apart.
But that silage would have been for your cattle, so you still need to store silage for the winter. So what did you have to do?
Well, I had put up a new silage pit and leave that one lying idle.
How much did you have to pay for the new silage pit?
The new silage pit was around about 80,000 at the time.
But I haven't heard any mention of a grant for farm buildings that have been affected by mica.
No, there is no grant available. The IFA have mentioned it a few times. It has been mentioned at meetings here in Donegal. I was in contact with the Minister's office a week ago, and they know nothing of any grant for fixing farm buildings at the moment.
Because there's a conservative estimate that there may be 10,000 homes across Donegal and Mayo affected by mica. I've never heard an estimate for any of the farm buildings. But you're involved in putting up farm buildings across this area of Donegal as well. We're just outside Letterkenny. I mean, what do you judge the scale of the issue to be for farm buildings?
I would say probably 50% of the farm buildings in Donegal will have a problem. All the buildings on everybody's yard won't be affected, but anything built with blocks is a disaster.
What do farmers in the locality say about it?
Farmers in the locality are waiting, hopefully, that the government will do something for them. Like, they're not looking to get complete new yards built, but they'll like fixed the problem that's already there. It is a safety issue. It was announced there not that long ago that there's going to be a lot more safety inspections on farm yards because of farm deaths in every county, not only Donegal. And how you could come and inspect a man's farm yard that's fallen down with mica and tell him, I don't know what they're going to tell him, how he has to stop. I don't know, and there's no grant aid available for him to fix it.
The issue for you is that you don't just have it in your farmyard, you have it in your house as well.
We do have it. The dwelling house was built in 1997-98. It has mica as well, and we have the tests all done. The money paid for the engineers, 6,700 I think it was. That money's paid, and now we're trying to get on the next step of the ladder is full demolition. But that is very, very slow and very, very hard to get on.
Right. We go up and have a look at this house.
We can.
A bit warmer in here anyway.
Well, now you've seen what mica wall looks like.
I'd never seen it before. Well, and I wonder, is that part of the issue that it only affects certain counties and the people who live in those counties are disproportionately affected? That the rest of the country doesn't really understand the scale of the problem?
Well, the northwest would seem to be the worst.
So, in the house, Christine, how bad is it?
Well, it's pretty bad. Under every radiator, there's cracks. Outside, there's cracks. Shuttered wall, there's cracks. There's moist coming from the walls, which it smells like. You kind of wash the walls every other day because you can see it coming up through the floors.
That's a hard thing to kind of explain, or for someone at home to wrap their heads around, that the house is nearly kind of... is cracking around.
Well, the damp's getting on out of the cracks, and then the frost comes, it's going to burst the walls further. If you get mild winters, it'll probably not be so bad, but we don't get mild winters in Donegal.
So it's a waiting game?
It definitely is.
What's the smell like, Christine?
Look, it's rotten. It's an old musty smell. Like, if you put your nose into the room, you'll not smell today because I'm home and I have a clean. But tomorrow, like, it's just a musty smell, damp.
And you have to constantly kind of battle against it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is it, where is it worse? Is it in the bedrooms?
In the bedrooms.
Mm-hmm. So when you're going to sleep at night, you can mm-hmm. smell it.
Yeah.
What would you like to say to people who are listening who just don't understand it?
What can you do?
It's
supposed to be your home for life, like, but...
Did you build this house when you first came here together?
Yes.
Did, yeah.
And you brought up your two girls here as well?
And we have a boy too, he's in Australia. But, like, this house needs painted, it needs done up. What's the point in putting money into it? And it's just going downhill, you just wouldn't be Irish coming home to it anymore.
That's not the type of person you are, I can see. Like, the place is so well put together.
It's clean, but it's not clean.
If houses go long enough in Donegal without something being done, there will be people killed on a stormy night. Without a doubt. It's waiting to happen. I did hear where there was blocks fell off a gable and there were children playing and out around the house on bicycles and one thing or another. And they didn't hit the children, but the next time they move the wall. And that's really not good enough. Where do you, like, you could speak all night, but the problem's still going to be the same. The money's not coming to the county fast enough. The scheme is too awkward to get onto, and it's putting people off. There are people handing the keys back to the banks.
tell them to keep them. That has happened. I know people have done it. The houses are lying a wilderness. The hedges, the bushes growing up around them. The roofs are ready to fall in because the blocks can't hold them up.
Whatever about the farm sheds down below, would you be happy just to get the house done if the green light was given on the house?
Definitely would.
Yeah.
Because we can do the farm sheds ourselves. You like somewhere decent to live. It's too bad you work all your life and you couldn't have a decent home to live in.
Well, that's it. Our children are here. Anything happened to them?
You'd like something at the end of your life to pass on to somebody. Let them sell it or enjoy it or keep it, whatever they like to do with it. But like a house, the minute's a liability. And nothing at all. And a lot of houses are just a liability. And it's worse they're going to get.
Leonard and Christina Toy talking to Hannah Quinn Mulligan there. And as you might have heard in the news as well, a new political party established by Micah Campaigners has been given approval to fight in the local and European elections next year. So that issue most definitely is not going away. This coming Tuesday morning, Dr. Evie Nuhulavon, chairperson and 100th member of the Citizens Assembly on Biodiversity Loss, will be before the Oireachtas Committee on Environment and Climate Action to talk about the report, which was published last April. You may recall that the Assembly, which was made up of 99 people randomly selected to form a representative group of Irish society, voted on over 150 recommendations, which they'd like the Irish government to enact as a way of urgently tackling nature loss. And at the time of the publication of the report, Dr. Nuhulavon said it was a call to action. Well, she came in to give an update on what has been going on since the report was published.
So since then, I have been giving a lot of presentations to policymakers, to state agencies and various groups like CHOGUSC, like the EPA Water Conference, like the Sustainable Tourism Working Group at the Department of Tourism. The Citizens Assembly on Biodiversity Loss recommended that all local authorities have a biodiversity officer. And as of now, 25 posts have been created and there's 6 more to go. So things like that are very heartening. And it's great to see that so much action is being taken. People aren't waiting for the Citizens Assembly report to be rubber stamped. They're kind of taking initiatives that they can do themselves. But the next step now is that we'll formally present to the Oireachtas Joint Committee on Environment and Climate Action on Tuesday. The majority of the recommendations were really emphatically voted for. And so it's to really kind of encourage that action now. It's to make sure that there are structures and policies that support the good work that is ongoing by communities, by NGOs, by local authorities, by state agencies. So it's to make sure that in the background, our policymakers are making sure that that is all very well supported and resourced.
I presume you want funding as well, because where you have verbal commitments is one thing, but where you have funding, you usually get action.
One thing that the members of the Assembly kind of recommended was that the National Parks and Wildlife Service be funded and resourced so that they can enact the legislation that's already there. But it's also making sure that farmers are well resourced, so that the farmers who are doing excellent work actually to preserve their lands and the wildlife on their lands, as well as providing food for us, that they're rewarded. And you know, I've been listening to farmers on Countrywide, and some that are losing out on a grant because they already have ticked a box somewhere else. Payments should be for results, and that it shouldn't be capped necessarily. Like, if you're doing great work, that shouldn't be capped. It should be rewarded. You know, if we think about the fact that we had over 500 pristine rivers in the 1980s, and we now have 32. And if we think about the freshwater pearl mussel in Ireland, which is, you know, almost extinct in the rest of the world, we have it here, but it's in 67 sites. And 66 of those are now polluted. I'm from the shores of Lough Carra, and my family's fished for years on the Corrib. Health of the water is really important, not only to the people who use it and we use it every day, but also to tourism and the economy. So it's urgent that we act on water. I mean, the European courts found Ireland again had failed to look after its specially protected areas. So yes, if we just actually enact and don't break our own laws, the members of the Citizens Assembly recommended that biodiversity be in a specific department with a ministerial role. Unfortunately, where it is at the moment, it's in the Department of Housing. Yes, the National Parks and Wildlife Services are also there, but the resourcing also needs to happen across departments for climate action, transport, for agriculture. It's to ensure that we have an independent agency that can kind of coordinate all of the work and also coordinate the work that's been done by the voluntary groups and the NGOs. I mean, I found out about a group of volunteers who were looking after the native goat in Ireland, do you know? All the Tidy Towns groups, the groups that are looking after particular rivers, etc. There's great stuff going on. Highlight it, celebrate it, coordinate it. And we need one agency to kind of oversee all that.
83% of the members voted in favour of a constitutional referendum to install the protection of biodiversity and nature into the Irish constitution. Mm-hmm. Are you still hopeful that'll happen?
I'm hopeful that it will be considered, of course, because it was so emphatically voted on by the Citizens Assembly. I actually spoke at the UN as part of Mother Earth Day in April, and I was blown away by the amount of other countries that are already incorporating it into their laws and constitutions themselves. We've taken it for granted a lot in Ireland that nature will always be there for us to enjoy. But actually, in the ways that we are acting right now, it may not be there for future generations. Before we get to something like considering a constitutional change, I think we can look at the lower hanging fruit, which is enacting legislation we already have here. It's really important that we have dialogue, that we don't come from the extremes on this. And that was something that the Assembly did incredibly well. Really measured, considered recommendations to go back to the Oireachtas that balance economy, society and nature. And I want to just emphasise that members here really recognise the core role farms and farming communities have in looking after nature and looking after the land. And with that, they want them to be properly supported and funded. Absolutely read the recommendations, see what there is that you might be able to do or that you might be able to support. I would also highly recommend people to emphasise that nature is important to you, environment is important to you, that you want to make sure that we have wildlife that sustains all that happens in our natural world, to make sure that we have fresh water, that we have healthy soil, so that we have healthy animals, so that we have healthy people. And whether it's building and planning laws, it's working with the school and actually encouraging that love of the outdoors and having outdoor learning and planting, etc. Everybody has a role to play and we can all play our part in that.
What was your overriding impression of the connection or not between what people think on the ground and what politicians are or are not doing when it comes to policy?
There was no difference between young people and old people caring about our natural world, caring about the environment. Just because you're from rural Ireland doesn't mean that you don't care. Yeah, I think sometimes you care more because you understand the value of it and you're in touch with it every day. The conversations that are happening here and the recommendations that we see here really emphatically emphasise Irish people want to maintain their pride in their natural world, because we had voices from the community across farming, across peatlands, across the work in forestry, etc. And yes, differences of opinion, but that we can find a balance with it. That's what the Citizens Assembly does really well. That's part of that deliberative democracy process.
Perhaps one of the biggest challenges and concerns amongst some farmers, particularly dairy farmers at the moment and in the last few months, has been the nitrates derogation. Do you understand that concern?
I absolutely do. Listen, I have 7 uncles who are farmers. You know, these aren't conversations that are foreign to me. But at the core of this, we have to admit failures in policies and in prior practices. The policies were pushing the maximisation of agricultural products. But farmers that were members of the Assembly and that spoke to the Assembly always said that farmers will follow policy and incentives, but they have to be structured there in the right way. So it will take change. That requires a lot of dialogue and it does require understanding. And I think it's really important to emphasise here that the Citizens Assembly want farmers to have viable income, but that we value now not just the agricultural outputs, but also the really important ecosystem services that farmers cultivate. And they do that through looking after hedgerows, through making sure that the water is of good quality, because they need that good quality water too. It's making sure that we are optimising outputs within the environmental boundaries that we have. And hopefully we'll see a turnaround. Farmers problem solve every day in their work. They are problem solvers. So let's bring them in to how we can solve this problem. They're a key part of the solution. And if we protect our biodiversity, it actually mitigates the climate action damage. It's two sides of the same coin. And now it's just figuring out what are the best policies and structures we can put in place to do that.
Dr. Evie Nihulavon talking to me about the Citizens Assembly on biodiversity loss. And if you want to read the report, it is on citizensassembly.ie. A lot of you are asking also for the websites of the women who were in earlier. We're going to tweet that on RTE, at RTE Countrywide, with all the links there as well. But before we go this morning, if you've ever wondered what it's like to work in a professional kitchen, or you know someone who might be interested, well, here's a chance to give it a go, because Open Kitchen Week is taking place in November, and one of the chefs taking part is Barry Ralph, owner of House of Plates in Castlebar in Mayo. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Ella.
Now, what should people expect in your kitchen if they decide to book in one of what is 300 slots in 50 kitchens across 14 counties in Ireland?
Yeah, so we're basically opening up the kitchen for the general public to come in, have a look, see our day-to-day running off the kitchen, meet the team, see a typical working day as a chef. So that's what it's about.
Why are you doing it?
We're doing it just to try and entice people into the industry, to give them a chance to see behind the scenes, and they're not looking at the television or whatever to see the way a professional kitchen works. We want to show them the reality of it. You know, the teamwork, the banter, the ability to take raw produce and be creative with it and turn it into something beautiful.
I mean, I dare not raise the two words Gordon Ramsay, which everyone associates with kitchens. But I suppose that is the sort of stereotype, isn't it, of what people think, screaming and shouting and cursing in the kitchen.
Absolutely. You know, our industry got bad press for years, but that's all changed. You know, there's nobody doing the long hours anymore. There's nobody doing the roar and the shout, the scream, anything like that. You know, we want to create a positive working environment, especially in House of Plates. You know, we have a young team there. We all get on. We have banter. You know, we have a bit of crack. We come in. We work together all day. You know, we go foraging as a team. Then we meet the suppliers. We create dishes together. You know, and this is what we want to showcase to people who might have had an idea to say, oh, maybe I'd like to be a chef, but you know, I might be a bit shy, or I might be a bit too old, or whatever. You know, this is open to everybody to come in across the different food sectors in Ireland, to have a look at the different kitchens, and just to see the day-to-day running of it.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Barry. That's Barry Ralph, owner of House of Plates. If you want to take part, go to chefnetwork.ie and sign up. That's it for us this morning. Dave Gibson was on sound, Brian Moss and Brian Lally behind the scenes. We'll talk to you next week.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.